session number 17747, reel 4.
Did the threat of the glass house hang over you during basic training? Was it used as a bogeyman to reinforce discipline?
Well, I wouldn't put it quite like that, because people were not sent lightly to the glass house. I mean, they have to have done something really wrong. It was no more used as a threat than you would expect people to behave reasonably well out shopping because of the fear of prison. I mean, it's a remote situation. It was a dreadful piece of knowledge that this inhumane system existed at the end of the line if you did get into trouble. And no doubt it did act as some sort of deterrent.
Did you have any one in your squad who was a sort of hard case who could have been deterred only by that sort of threat?
No. We had one or two people whose names and even faces I can't remember, but the vague recollection of one or two Cockney lads who were really rather wide boys who resembled one or two of the characters in The Dad's Army on the television.
Private Walker,
Private Walker, yes. I mean, tending to be, you know, slightly spivvish, and would not have hesitated to make off with any equipment if they could have done it without detection. But there was no trouble of this kind at all in my squad, no. Anyway, it wasn't until the middle of April when the weeks and months seem endless when you're this age and you know that you're in effect wasting time in which you ought to be getting your degree and all that sort of thing. All of life is passing you by and you're sitting in a cotton mill in Lancashire not knowing what you're doing or why. And the sense of frustration is hard to describe. At the same time, there is a sense of irresponsibility because you have not brought this on yourself. It has been foisted onto you, forced onto you by other people, and you are helpless. You're not quite cannon fodder, but you're something fodder, war fodder. 16th of April, I see that the battery sergeant major sent for me and told me to get ready to go to join the 3rd Field Training Regiment at Worley the next day. Worley is a small town, a large village near Clitheroe in Lancashire, which has an old abbey, Worley Abbey, on a pleasant piece of river. I also saw on the same day that my friends, three of them, who were going in for OCTU, or two or three, had got into OCTU following their new style regiment, the War Office Selection Board, without having to do this preliminary extra training, which I'm facing. Perhaps I should have waited, and I might have been dealt with under the newer system. But at any rate, I'm not going to India, as they are. So I had a lift the next morning to Worley, and was then sent on from the regimental headquarters of the 3rd Field Training Regiment to an outpost where potential officers were dealt with. It was specially for them. This is where I was to come together with a lot of other people in my own sort of position. I can't remember how many, but I would have thought 30 or 40. It was an old mansion of a house called Morton Hall, which has since disappeared off the map and has been demolished. I tried to find it once. It's not there. And I spend the next many weeks there, right until the beginning of September, in fact. It was frustrating and to an extent a worrying time, because I had not yet been formally cleared to go to OCTU, but it was a curiously pleasant hiatus. There's nothing, I knew that I could do nothing to hasten the procedure, but I didn't have any really serious doubts about the outcome, and I remember it as a delightful early summer, during which in my off-duty times I would walk round the ruins of Worley Abbey and sit by the river and do pencil sketches and write odd notes like these.
What did you do when you were on duty?
Well, on duty, it was a hard grind of gun drill and the usual exercises surrounding gunnery, like surveying, use of directors and theodolites.
So you did get round to actually drawing maps at that stage?
Oh yes, we did some theodolite map making.
Were you still interested in going into cartography? Or had you lost interest in that?
No, I was always interested. I wasn't that I ever hoped to be a cartographer. It's just that having got interested in it in the sixth form at school, I found it a continuing general interest without being a serious professional one.
Did you also do things like reconnoitering march routes and sketching maps for those and that sort of thing?
You would sketch maps mainly for potential gunnery purposes, so as you would from an observation post in real life action in the gunners, you would get a pad and sketch out the highlights of the landscape, particular church tower, particular steeple, and you'd take bearings onto these to pinpoint exactly where they should be.
This sounds more like a panorama than a map.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry, yes. You used the word sketch at one point, I thought. Sketching, yes, for a gun.
Well, I was thinking of a sketch map, because that's one military skill, obviously, which is of importance, but for gunnery purposes, sketching a panorama is also...
Yes, they are both useful. You need to know where you are on the map and where X is on the map. Mm. And you need to... just let me think what I was trying to say. You need to see it graphically, because it helps everybody. I've got one or two in my notes of old sketches. Sorry, map making. No, we didn't do any serious map making.
Did you do memory drawing while you were on this training at all?
I don't think so. I don't remember it as such. You mean looking at a landscape and then drawing it?
Looking at a landscape and then drawing it the next day from memory.
No, I don't remember doing that ever.
Did you do any work dealing with photographs as a way of constructing panoramas?
Not at that stage. I think aerial photography hadn't quite impacted on the training process, at least at my level of operations then. We may have done a little bit of study of aerial photographs at OCTU later on, but not at this stage, no. I think aerial photography was far too expensive and too valuable for... The products to be floating around ordinary little training regiments at this time.
Well, there was a procedure also developed where photographs were taken at ground level.
Yeah.
And then the features in the photograph would be highlighted by drawing onto it. That was a way in which...
Yes, I can see that would be a good idea. It would be a more accurate form of panorama without the freehand drawing. I never came across it, but I can see, I can visualise what you mean. No.
You just mentioned gun directing as well as part of the training. What did that entail doing?
Well, pointing the guns in the right place by compass. Then, of course, there was the... use of the director, which is let me think. What was the thing that was built into the gun?
Well, there'd be a spirit level, wouldn't there?
There was an instrument whose name I forgot.
Clinometer.
That. Yes, that's another familiar word. But there was a particular thing operated by number 3 on the gun, and I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't was it the director? Or was the director something which we had not on the gun? I can't remember. I have to look up the handbooks, I've still got them.
Well, were these guns that you were using here 25-pounders, or were you still on the 18-pounder?
We had a mix. When we got to this, we had, I think there were one or two 25-pounders, but we were still on the 18-pounders as well. But we were beginning to move on to 25-pounders, particularly because this was a field training regiment. I mean, the gunners being trained here would be gunners on the guns and not on the signals. Although, as I explained, we were in a special detached part of the regiment, which was, unless you were very unlucky, you were going to be an officer anyway, and you would have to deal with guns as well as signals.
Were you segregated from the ordinary gunners, or did you mix?
At this point, we were physically in a different building. See, we were 2 miles away, or 3 miles away.
That is a considerable distance.
Oh, yes. It was not intended to be a social distance. It was a matter of hiving off this particular group of people into a self-contained unit where they could be dealt with more easily. And I guess under tighter control, stronger, more detailed observation. And indeed, we were watched and observed pretty closely. You know, this is where the drilling became rather more pernickety than it had been.
You were under more pressure.
We were under more pressure, and deliberately we were being pressed. We were being judged more harshly.
What effect did that have on you? Did it make you work harder to come up to the standards, or did you find yourself resenting?
No, it's both. I mean, both the two go inextricably. You work harder and you resent it more.
So you were doing surveying, which is obviously an absolutely essential part of gunnery, especially if you're going to be firing off the map.
Yes.
And gun directing.
Gun laying.
Gun laying, yes. Because directing, really, one would imagine, is what happens in the command post.
Yes, that's right. You have a director in the command post for fixing the gun position in relation to the battery and to the rest of the regiment. So you've got the layout. In the battery office, you've got a chart with all of the gun positions on it. So far as the individual gun is concerned, you're more concerned about the gun laying, which has to be done, of course, either through open sights or on the map, mainly from the map.
So you're sort of getting away from training as an individual gunner and being trained towards what we might call collective gunnery. In other words, the management of artillery.
Touches of that, yes.
Touches,
I mean,
that.
It's still more towards the former, but touches of that, yes. It wasn't yet approaching being at an octave, but it was. There were shades of that, yes.
Do you know if the ordinary chaps who are being trained as gun numbers were doing the same sort of syllabus or something?
I really don't know. I never knew the answer to that. Jumping ahead a little, they closed down this place whilst I was at it, this Morton Hall place, as I suppose a sort of, even in wartime, there were retrenchments, and we were all taken into the headquarters in Clitheroe, or near Clitheroe, after a couple of months, and there we were all together with the rookies who were first-time gunners as well as ourselves, and the whole ragbag of people all concentrating on gunnery. And but by that time, I think things had gone too far for me to know exactly what regime those who had been called up as new gunners were undertaking. We were rather senior to them, both in terms of our training and our service. So we were not mixed with them. We were still slightly separate, even though we ended up in the same barracks.
What were the living quarters and food like? Were they roughly comparable?
Yes, roughly comparable. We were in huts. I think they were wooden huts rather than Nissen. They were reasonably comfortable. I would have thought there were about a dozen people in a hut with a bombardier in charge. I did note one or two things at that place which I've always remembered. I mean, one was that quite the brightest man on the whole premises in terms of knowledge of gunnery and all the technicalities of gun laying and map making, you name it, who knew it by heart, was a Lance Bombardier, who should have been probably, if not the colonel, at least a senior captain. And he knew everything, but he had no graces, no social graces of any kind. He was roughly spoken, had no intention of being anything smoother than that, and had no acceptable class manners or anything. He just knew his job. He was a rough diamond. And it's whilst I was there that somebody must have realised how unjust the treatment was, because he got a double promotion to Lance Sergeant doing the same job, which was pretty well telling everybody on the premises how to run a gunner regiment. It's always stuck in my mind, because it revealed to me a sort of class-ridden nature of our society as a whole, as just a fact of life. He was a total genius, but his face didn't fit, into, certainly not into an officer's mess.
Do you know if he'd been a regular soldier?
Oh, no.
He'd just come in wartime.
He was a rookie who was an industrious chap who quite obviously was the salt of the earth. I mean, if he was given a job to do, he did it, and his job was to learn. And he had a quick mind and had learnt thoroughly and become absolutely invaluable and irreplaceable.
Do you have any idea of what he'd been doing in civil life?
No, I wish I could remember. I wish I could remember. Because there were some very interesting people there. I mean, one of my Bombardier colleagues had captained England at soccer, for example. And there were other people. There was a professional golfer who spent a large part of his time off with the colonel.
This genius, Lance Bombardier or Bombardier,
yes.
Did he resent the fact that he was...
He showed little resentment. I used to talk to him. Why didn't he resent things? Well, you know, and they didn't use the term, but I mean, the will of God was his attitude. But you could sense that he did feel a bit peeved, and he was delighted when he got this double promotion at one go, which I'd never heard of before, but that's what happened to him.
I think you mentioned that there was a sergeant major at this regiment.
Yes, I will tell you about the... it was the RSM. It was some little time later when eventually I and one or two others were to go off to Octu, or at least to pre-Octu. There's still another stint to go through pre-Octu. But it was the amusement of, which I noted in my diaries, of being told off to get ready to go to pre-Octu, and the having a chat with the RSM, two or three of us. And this RSM saying to us, you think you're going to be officers, you chaps, which of you would kill a German with a pocket knife with your bare hands? And of course we looked rather sheepish and shamefaced and didn't pretend that we would. And I thought, what a bloody fool. I mean, the obvious retort would have been, well, have you done it? And the second, more cynical retort was, that isn't why we joined the Royal Artillery. But I remember this man as being the sort of, almost the set-piece satire of an RSM with a strong voice and little brain. But on the whole, I found the sergeant majors I did come in touch with to be very impressive people. Now, where were we?
Well, I think we were at the 3rd Field Training Regiment doing...
Yes, that's right.
Surveying and gun directing and gun drills. And were there any other new skills that you learned while you were there? Taking you on from what you'd learned at...
No, I don't think so. It was much of the same. There was nothing particularly inspiring.
Were you able to keep up your signalling?
That was not wholly neglected. We did less of it, more emphasis on the guns, but we did that as well. And of course, the driving, we spent quite a lot of time motorcycling around. And we did a little bit of cross-country motorcycling there, it's true, the foothills of Pendle Hill.
What about field firing? Did the regiment take its guns out?
I'm trying to remember. We did go. I know we went on some sort of a trip from there with the guns. I note in these terms in my notes this curious limbo of war that went on through the spring and summer, punctuated by gun drills, constant criticisms of us as potential officers by NCOs and our squad officers. It all seemed very pointless at a time when I could have been finishing my degree in June had I stayed at the university.
Did you start having regrets at that time at the course of action?
I bitterly regretted it, yes, because I was wasting my time. I accepted the experience as being part of what life has to offer, but I was conscious that I could have steered things in a quite separate direction and had a certificate B in which would have taken me to Octu at the same time as I eventually did. The intervening year would have been spent taking a degree instead of doing all this stuff. So yes, I wasn't sure enough of what would have happened to resent it deeply, but I did have regrets, yes.
On reflection, do you think that your time in the other ranks stood you in good stead, and that you were a better officer than you would have been if you had gone straight to Octu?
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm absolutely clear about that. Mm. Yes. I mean, I saw it in the reverse direction by realising the the deficiencies of understanding that people had who had never been in the ranks. This is all too clear. They just didn't know how the other half lived within the army. Also, there were interesting little things. I remember, as I put in my notes, going manning a £25 gun display at the summer fete in a Lancashire town, very proud in my uniform, showing off the gun to the civilians who came flocking round, letting the children pull the levers and that sort of thing.
Children always do seem to like playing with guns. And
yes, that's right. That's right. What was happening at this time? Well, you know, this was the time of the air war with land fighting going on in Egypt and Burma. We heard the Americans and the RAF had sent 1,000 bombers over to Essen, and this was the kind of background context. Mm. And I was here feeling totally stranded. My friends had gone off to India. This was a limbo.
You were neither getting your degree nor getting into the war.
That's right.
And were you taking a professional interest in the conduct of the war by that stage? Had your military training made you more aware and conscious of...
No, I don't think it would be fair to claim that it had made me more conscious. I mean, my awareness of the war would have been much the same, whether I was in a civilian job or a student or in the army. One was really no closer to the war than anybody else.
Did you have any lectures on the way the war was going in general while you were in these training regiments?
I don't think we did. I'm trying to remember whether ABCA was in action at this time or not. If it was, then we would have had the ABCA pamphlets on the way the war was going and international affairs and the home front to read, as well as the diet of daily mirrors and things in the mess. Not in the mess, in the...
The NAFI.
Mm.
But I think this resolved, wasn't it, when you went off to the pre-Octu? Did that follow another board, or did that just happen?
Yes. Can I tell you a bit of action before that, which is useful just to fill in? At some point around July, having been there for 2 months at Moreton Hall, this detached mansion, we moved into the main barracks, a mill in Worley proper, and we lost the homely atmosphere by army standards of our little Moreton Hall in a mass of Nissen huts and strange NCOs. But before that, in June, we had been taken on a major exercise down in Wales, started setting off at 4:30 in the morning. I rode in a truck with the major, and we arrived at a gunnery camp near Trawsfynydd, which is the home of a, more recently, of a nuclear power station in North Wales. It's the first time I had been to Wales, and I made a lot of mental notes about how lovely it seemed. I spent a day, the first time I'd ever done it, as an observation post, which is not normally practicable in urban conditions, as an observation post, and was grabbed, as I've put it, for wireless signalling. So it was my first semi-action use of a radio set to order gunfire, and I enjoyed hearing my own officers ticked off each in turn by an IG, that is an instructor in gunnery, who was rather like a god. This was my first ever experience of real firing, and the noise of 25-pounder guns close by was something terrific. Then there was a further day of shooting before we were packed off to another camp by the sea at Harlech. I went with an advance party to prepare the tents. Typically, I went later on my own to have a look at Harlech Castle before turning in for the night. Then we spent 3 days working as navvies, digging trenches for an anti-tank range on Harlech Sands. It was hard going, but we did manage to get a swim in the sea. We ate in the cafe near the castle, a couple of us, and discussed our futures. His was regrettably short. He was dead within a year. On the Saturday, we had a day off and went down the coast to Barmouth, and went into a quaint little cinema and noted that Wales abounded in pretty girls. On the Sunday, we dug solidly at our anti-tank trenches before setting up back to Worley at 6 o'clock in the evening and travelled across Wales through the night under a full moon. And for the first time, we encountered a group of American black engineer soldiers singing superbly in the dusk whilst I was waiting for a late train back to camp. That's, by the way, it was just a little insert. This was, it pins down, my first experience of guns being fired for real. Not in action, but for real.
What sort of range were they shooting over? What distance did they?
Well, it would be a use of the 1, 2, 3, 4 charges and supercharge as necessary, but normally, so as not to wear the guns out, they kept it down to about charge 3, which I think would be up to about 5 miles or a bit more.
Was this shooting done as demonstration, or was it a genuine exercise in discovering and engaging and attacking targets?
I wish I could remember. I wish I could remember. I mean, it was a permanent firing camp used by the gunners from all over the country, and I guess they did what imaginative things they could do, which might have included, erecting spot targets, a quick wooden hut or something to be fired at.
And your job then, you know, was to spot the fall of shot, wouldn't it?
As an observation post, and to correct it, yes. You do the bracketing, drawn over the target, under the target, on the target.
Was this a permanent OP with a concrete shelter, or were you simply sent out to find a suitable place and
I can't remember. I mean, the answer is I simply can't remember. I would have thought that it would be a choice, one of a choice of permanent ones, for obvious line-laying reasons. you couldn't so easily on a two-day exercise do the whole job without a signal, a fully operational signals unit. You couldn't have got lines laid, although in this case, of course, it was radio, as I've commented, but no doubt there were lines as well in case the radio broke down. The answer is I don't know.
Who else was with you? Was it just you and an officer in this OP?
It would be me and an officer, yes, that's right. From our unit, we, as that training regiment, took over the firing camp for a couple of days and were guided, no doubt, by the permanent staff, including this horrendous instructor in gunnery, who would be there to keep people up to the mark very rightly.
Did you actually see him? Or
oh, yes. Yes, I mean, he would be a captain or a major, I can't remember which. But instructors in gunnery were really the creme de la creme of the gunnery world. It was a staff appointment.
So was it after this then that you went off to Kent as a?
Well,
or was there another stage yet?
I don't think there was another stage. No. Got back in Morley after a spot of leave, and the clocks went back that year as early as the 9th of August. I wonder why. My friend Owen, who was to die within a year, was posted to a pre-op two camp in Kent, and I was sorry to see him go. But I still had to go back to the War Office Selection Board. The next day I was told to go to Chester again for interview. And I've put in my notes that this tedious Kafka-like wait for something to make sense was nearly over. There was a ridiculous lecture on Hitler with the RSM asking us potential officers whether we felt able to kill a